Welcome to Nathan and Buck in the Morning, Season 2. The season that's not going to steal the tagline from...
The season of not the making, the season of the now made but going to be made more.
The season that will appear on iTunes.
The season that will appear on iTunes.
The season and... where we took all your feedback, looked at it and went, okay, so we decided, you know...
Mainly abuse.
Mainly abuse, mainly by people I don't actually know. I don't actually think they're just. I think they're just angry at me in general.
I think it was just you. Just what are you doing?
Street. Get a job. I'm like,
ruining my life.
I'm on the way to work. It's not good enough. Get a promotion. Okay, buy a better house. It got really strange, actually, and quite impersonal towards the end. But no. So you know what? We have a whole new format this season. We took a lot of feedback on board. One of the big things people wanted was they wanted certain segments every week. You know, something you could follow.
And some things that were tied in with, Facebook community and stuff like that. What people are talking about.
More about the user. So, you know what? Every topic of the week is now going to be posted on Facebook. So our question of the week is going to be our topic of the week. So, you know, we'll get on, give you a preview. You can jump on, have your thoughts. And then we'll get on the podcast and we'll discuss our thoughts. So it's kind of great that way. That way, you know, you can share your ideas out there. If you know, and we can kind of look at what you think and then we'll respond to it. You know,
integration.
Yeah.
The machines will rise.
They will.
And they will control us one day.
I know. I'm already bought my microwave, a little miniature microwave to keep it company, so it's happy.
You disgust me. You disgust me.
Yeah, when I'm your metal machine master, it doesn't matter. Your organs will one day. Anyway, I don't know where that's going. Okay, so that was hello and welcome. So news of the week. We need. I realize we should look into getting. You sit there counting your money like some.
We
sort
need
of pimp.
More money. it's my pimp money.
News of the week. What I think. So this week. What's it says? We need like a little intro for news of the week, which that'd be really cool. A little bit of music. Like news of the week.
Well, if. Maybe if someone could make like a little I don't know.
We're lazy. Go make one for us.
Anyone who listens to us, make us a You wanted news of the week.
Yeah.
Damn it. Make us a news of the week sound.
We sit here having to like do stuff. You do stuff.
Why don't you do something for once?
Jeez, audience, get it together. This is a one-sided relationship.
Oh. It is. It always has been.
Okay. So news of the week. Okay. Wow. So big news of the week for D&D fans. Wizards of the Coast recently released a new playtest package, including, wait for it, the Barbarian level 120. So this is really the first time we're actually sort of really seeing like a 120 class on this. I could be wrong. Please send your emails to, hate mail to Mr. Buck at, christopher.starbuck@gmail.com.
Is this D&D Next?
Yeah, D&D Next. So
this didn't exist when we played our
No. This was only recent, like this week. I got the email. Subscribed. I'm a big fan of it. I'm playtesting it. A new story, a new scenario, but mainly the Barbarian. So a 1 to 20 scenario for the Barbarian. Very excited about that. I think everyone should go check it out. I'm not going to spoil anything for you. I want you to go onto the site and download it yourself, but... Yeah. Does this mean with the inclusion of the Barbarian, are they going for all the classes, all the core classes? So will we see the Sorcerer? Because I know there was talk about that. There was talk about the Warlock. Will we see the Paladin finally? Because we saw the Monk. Monk is a strange inclusion.
I think that would be a safe bet to see the return of the original classes.
And of course, your favorite, the Ranger.
Of course, my absolute favorite, the Ranger, and I was a little disappointed there was no Paladin when we played. So I hope they're bringing all that back.
It makes sense. Yeah. But will they lift the alignment restriction from the Paladin and finally make it? Because the Paladin, the idea, I think, like I always had the idea of like, well, what if you had like an Orc Paladin who worships, the Orc gods as a holy knight? Of will they do that? Probably not. But I think it'd be cool.
We don't know. We just don't know. It's a brave new world.
Oh, in other news, Baldur's Gate 2 is available. Is available now on the iPad. So, the big release on Steam.
Really?
They did a HD version of it. It's now available on the iPad. A bit of controversy. Two of the characters are two extra characters, DLC. Now, you're already paying $11 for Baldur's Gate. I'm not sure how much it is on Steam. I think it's a bit less. Or even if it isn't, still it's an iPad game. I always feel like I should be paying less for the iPad experience because it's not ever going to be as good as my PC.
Ka-ching. Well played.
Yeah, Apple. I mean, charging $11...
Mm.
So and they're releasing DLC for it already. Well, that's... So two characters cost $3 each. So potentially you're paying almost $20 the full amount you would on Steam. Now, I don't know if the characters on Steam, the characters on the iPad version come on Steam. I mean, are they part of the package you can buy, or do you have to buy them as DLC? But if not, I'd be saying, well, why am I paying almost the full price, say maybe even potentially more than the Steam price? You know what? As I'm saying, I'll look it up right now. Potentially the Steam price for, like, an iPad game. I don't understand.
I don't know. I suppose the gap is perhaps starting to get bridged now with games, because on portable devices, because they are becoming more and more like the computer game variants. I mean, how similar is it to the original?
Oh, it's from what I've seen, it's pretty much a remake. It's a HD remake, you know. Because I think with Baldur's Gate, you've got to keep.
So it's better than the original. That's what we're saying.
It's a HD version. I mean, in gameplay, I think is quite similar. I mean, they've done a number of changes, but, you know, nothing. There we go. It's $20 on Steam. Now, what I don't know is, yep, no. Oh, okay. Yep, no. The two characters come free, so I'm getting on Steam. Sorry, three characters, but two of the characters are on the iPad. So I'm just going to double check it here. Just, you know, I don't want to get any angry. But I'm fairly sure that the two Steam characters. Yeah, the two Steam characters.
So $20 for a.
Roughly $18 to $17 for a full iPad. For a game you can get on Steam for.
A computer game on an iPad,
yeah,
basically,
but not as good as a computer game because it's on an iPad.
That's always going to be something that falls short, isn't it?
That's tough, yeah.
It's a
and I mean, by comparison, you know, Square has released like 4 blown RPGs for $15, but you know, you're paying $40 for all of those sort of level of RPGs in store, so that's okay. So what the heck, Baldur's Gate is another case of just, hey, you know what, the nerd market will pay for it. It's nostalgia. We can milk them dry. I mean, is it a case of like a niche market that we can charge a lot of money for? I mean, maybe if Baldur's Gate wasn't such a niche game, they'd be like, you know what, it's not as well known.
What do people charge for, say, a book on the Apple Store? You could pay $15 for a book.
I don't think you do, but we'll look into that. You know, now I'll look into that for next week.
Yeah, because you know, if you're paying that much for a book, and a book is several hundred pages of just words.
Mm.
That you read off your iPad, you know, to pay another $5 to play, you know, as much content in words at least, and then a game in itself, you know, is that so bad?
I still don't think it is, because the iPad to me is always like a secondary console. It's the console I play when I don't have time to play my actual computer.
So paying large amounts for games suddenly doesn't make sense on an iPad.
No. No, it does not. Oh,
well, if you are an iPad user, let us know what you think. I only have a little the Touch,
like
the MP3 player. I did have an iPhone, and that unfortunately it shit the bed.
That's our next news article.
Oh, do tell.
If you've not already done it, do not download the 6.1 app. It is horrible. One issue I found. Stupidly enough, was I thought, okay, I'll try out Cloud for a while, and I can imagine all the Apple users sniggering. Yeah, well, can't wait till your stupid device crashes for some unknown Apple reason. And what happened was, you know, you download Cloud, it goes, oh, cool, your contacts? Do you wanna sync all your contacts? No worries. Cool, well, we'll just go into Cloud and sync all your contacts from Cloud, but we'll delete all your contacts in the meantime. Oh, what? There's no contacts on Cloud? Now you have no contacts. You want to sync with the Cloud? Awesome, there's nothing there. You've synced nothing with nothing. Congratulations. Now, this issue has been around actually since at least 5.1, from what I can tell from the forums. So, what the hell, Apple? You had an entire version to fix this problem. You didn't bother to... No, cool. Now, I understand the argument of, well, you should read the carefully... You should carefully read the thing before you press OK. It's an Apple. Since when do you have to think with an Apple? You know, and again, wouldn't it warn you? Wouldn't it have this big, like, by the way, this will happen? And secondly, for a device supposed to be so user-friendly, wouldn't they fix... Like, wouldn't they have this, like, they just... do something about this, because I can imagine all the other people, like similar people at work, had this issue. One of my colleagues just said, oh, you should read the thing. I said, have you ever actually read a
disclaimer?
It just went silent, like, exactly.
Yeah.
So, again, good job, Apple. My guessing is taking the usual Apple response, which is, there is no problem, it's a you issue. Apple's entire
customer service is a you issue. It's a you issue, and, you know, Apple's great, but there are some things they need to change.
Look.
Their attitude being one of them.
Their business model, you probably, I mean, my wife went and got her computer fixed, the car drive, there's a nice little bug that Apple has, that Macs have, where,
they just break.
Horribly. Effectively, without going into it, it just kills itself.
Yep.
But randomly. They went to the store and they said, actually, look, you know, it's a couple of months past the warranty, but we'll do you a favor and we'll replace it. We'll fix it up for you. So, I'd say the customer service side of things is kind of good. Maybe, but their tech guys, I don't know, on the forums and stuff may not be the best. Okay. So, any other news?
Other news? No. Things are going forward well.
Mm-hmm.
I saw the nice little Wanted Dead or Alive thing you put up on the Facebook there.
Thanks, yeah.
Looks good. What is that for? Can you tell us? Can you give us perhaps a little... What are you working on, Buck?
I was actually commissioned by a friend of ours who was like, was sitting around at night. He asked me to do some artwork for a product. He's not a product. It's a personal project he's doing, so... This isn't a release. This isn't a Deviant Games release. This is a personal thing he's just making for himself. And I misinterpreted. I played the game once.
Yep.
And I think this is the issue. I think I got the wrong impression. Apparently, this happens a lot actually with people who do book covers, where the artist will read the book, and go, "Oh, this is what I think it's about," and do a cover.
Yep.
And from the impression I got from the game and what he told me, I pictured like a Western kind of space Firefly kind of thing, where one of the users commented, like that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So I tried to do, not Firefly.
You tried to do a Western look.
A Western space look,
yeah.
He didn't leave. No, rejected it outright. That's cool.
Can you tell us a little bit about what it actually is that you, this thing is?
Because
I know very little. I've only know a little bit of what you've told me.
I think, it's a, see, I played it once.
Yep.
And
apparently you've misinterpreted the whole thing.
Yeah, so anything I might say.
I might be wrong, but it's a sci-fi western.
It's not apparently.
It's not.
Apparently,
okay.
It's not western at all. I got the impression because we were like, because you know we were rogue, like operators in this spacecraft touring the galaxy. It's set inside our solar system.
Okay.
You know there are various planets. Every planet's been colonized. There's different space factions. You know, it's that kind of like.
So it's a space setting, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you could say fight. I can understand why.
Understand why. I think everyone latches onto Firefly and those kinds of shows.
But not
because...
even Firefly. I'd say, yeah, like maybe Cowboy Bebop, that kind of. You know, those like the planets.
It's a stylized space world. It really is. Yeah.
To me, I saw it as the Wild Wild West, but with planets instead of towns.
Yep.
And, because we're just these rogue people drifting through space, trying to do an odd job and make some money and keep our ship together.
Yeah. That's Firefly.
That's how I saw it.
But
you know, you say Firefly, but I think Firefly, it didn't define a genre. It just took a genre and made it popular.
Yeah.
Because the idea of space commanders flying through the skies, in fact, you know, and I didn't say this to him, but Rogue Trader. The original one. The original Games Workshop in the 1980s.
I haven't played.
1980s. Here's the theme. You're a rogue band of like you're a space captain and his wily crew doing jobs based on your charter throughout the Imperium.
Really, that's what you did.
So it's not
a new idea.
Well no, I mean I don't think Joss Whedon has had send your hate mail to deviantgames@hotmail.com.
No, or send it to Buck. I don't want to deal with it.
But I don't think I'm not saying he hasn't look. Joss Whedon didn't invent the wheel. He reinvented the wheel, but he made a really cool wheel. Look, I'm trying to say this because all these fucking rabid firefighters, oh my god, you said something bad about Joss Whedon. I'm going to kill you and then kill myself and all the ones I love because I'm just so emotionally... Go fuck off. Go.
I hardly imagine that any Joss Whedon fan is like that.
In my head, that's how I picture them.
That's how they're all like that.
Because anyone that ever gets obsessed with something in my head takes on a stupid voice and gains like 50 pounds.
Nice.
That's just
nice. It must be hell to live inside your head.
That's pretty good, actually. I'm pretty good. It must be. but the point is that, you know what? I think Joss Whedon did a great job of taking staples of the sci-fi and horror universes and reinventing them. I don't think he created those genres. I don't think he created vampire slaying, obviously. You know,
no.
But what he did with Buffy was fantastic. Same thing with Firefly. He didn't invent the space opera. He didn't invent the space cowboy. But what he did with it was really cool.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's my piece. So go ballistic, you stupid. They'll probably get more anger about calling them all fat and weird.
That'll probably be that's the thing that sets them off.
Well, one of us has to be the controversial one. and you know, you're just racist and borderline pedophilia. It's not even...
Whoa.
No.
Hey, really. I have to take responsibility.
Hey. not really. You're anti-pedophilia.
I'm anti-pedophilia, but definitely racist. And I want that. I want everyone to know that.
Actually, there was a great quote from my mum, who's very left-wing. Except what it said about gypsies, apparently. She said something. Gypsies. She's like, oh, you have to be careful of them, though, you know, because they all steal things.
Just all of them.
just that little...
They do.
Go on, it's a along. Thing. Will, you know, hates all right-wing people, except for gypsies, man. They steal things.
Except for gypsies.
Can't trust them.
She had a bad experience.
We, of course, are very pro-gypsies. Nothing against them. Please don't burn my car.
Or steal it.
Yeah, steal it and then burn it. Or burn it and steal it. I don't know. I don't know how they roll. It could be fireproof. Okay, so the next thing we got coming up is tips and tricks. Today's tips and tricks. I've been talking a lot, and I'll bring it up for like 5 minutes, and I'm going to stop.
That's all right. You keep talking. Apparently, you know what's going on. I'm just here for the ride.
Damn right.
Let's see,
season two rolls reverse.
You know what? And I like it. Let's do it.
So tips and tricks. I thought I'd start off this session. So this little session is just like bits on as GMs, as people who make games. You know, say you're playing. You're a new GM. You're a new player. Little things that can help you out through your everyday gaming life.
Yeah. So this is for role players.
Everyone
specifically.
No, not just role players.
Like, so it's across the board.
Hey, board games, online, whatever. You know, but just tips to the because a lot of game podcasts I found don't give you that. They give you the news of the week and whatever their experiences. But here's little things that we find that we do.
Yeah, absolutely.
As GMs,
we spend our lives gaming whenever we can, and as you can imagine, we pick up a few little bits and pieces here of what works and what doesn't work, and how to deal with particular people in particular situations. So, what are we talking about today?
The beauty of timelines. So I'm running a campaign setting. So I'm going to run for you not this week but next week. So I believe this week our campaign finishes.
Yes.
So I'm running a campaign for these guys, and one of the things I found, no matter what campaign I write, this is very important. It has to do with time. The reason I say timelines is not so much the timelines of the events of your campaign. Everyone's got them mapped out. You know when the army's going to invade. If you don't, I can't stress enough. At least you should be having the critical events timeline in your campaign.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which for those at home who don't know what that is, it is, you know, if you're watching like a movie, this is when the bomb goes off. This is when his friend dies. This is when the baddie is revealed to be, you know, the cop you thought was a friend all along. This is, you know, basically your script.
Yep.
What I'm talking about in timelines is character timelines. You have a cast of actors, if you will. You know, a cast of characters, and they're not always on stage. Not every character is not every NPC is going to be in the acolyte in the character's face.
Yeah, you're not going to be interacting with every NPC all the time.
You know, the king isn't always going to be talking to people. He doesn't follow you around going, "Slay the dragon! Now go over here! It would be good if you could save the prince." No, he doesn't. What I think is crucial, especially in a very free-form campaign setting, okay, well, the king doesn't, by contrast, wait around for people to turn up to do stuff. So, okay, you got a king in your campaign. What's he doing when the characters aren't there? When they're out of town slaying that dragon, what's he up to? Now, you don't have to tell the characters this. Half the time they'll never find out. But what's important is that it allows you to deal with the randomness of players, because I think no storyline. What's that quote about? No plan ever survives the first minute of battle.
Yeah, that's the quote.
No storyline ever survives the first minute of role playing. You know, there are times the characters are like, "Okay, I want you to meet the king." No, I don't want to meet the king. I don't like him. I'm going to go and just burn down a village. Well, okay, what's the king doing while you're trekking to that village? I don't think he's waiting for you at that village. You know, he's not waiting for you to turn up and stop you.
Yeah,
but he's probably doing something else. Okay, you haven't slayed that dragon. Well, he's probably going and finding other adventurers. So by having, or if you're away slaying the dragon, maybe the king's dealing with some internal politics.
Mm-hmm.
What this, or maybe he's off wooing a mistress. What this means is that it gives you some good background for what each of the characters doing. So when a player's like, hey, I just got back from killing this dragon, I'm gonna scout on ahead. I'm gonna just check out the kingdom.
Yep.
What's the king doing in that time? It gives it more realism. So, you sneak into the village. You see for a second, you swear you see the king like in disguise traveling on the road heading to a neighboring village because, you know, he's trying to seduce that mistress.
Yeah.
And it gives the king character and depth. Yeah. But at the same time, it gives optional bits of role-playing you wouldn't necessarily think about.
Sure, yeah.
So maybe his wife knows about it and she's sending a guild of assassins. So perhaps actually you count on the king and then you can work it out. Oh, wow, at this point, the king's being attacked. Now, if the characters turn up, they see it, they can do something about it. But if not, they get back and the king has been murdered. You know, he was found outside the highway. What was he doing there?
Hmm.
And it's good because it gives you stuff to have to run in the background, because sometimes, you know, because characters' lives aren't driven by go here, go to point A, go to point B, go to point C.
Yes.
Things are happening all the time. Some of those players don't want to do point A. So they want to go to the bar. But what if that bar has the queen meeting up with her assassins to kill off her husband? See, right then, top of my head.
Top of your head, you made a story.
But, right, and that can all be running behind things.
Mm.
So it's giving this whole... It brings your whole campaign to life.
Mm.
But what it also does is it means you're never without answers when the characters go, actually, I want to go and talk to the Guild of Assassins. Oh, okay, well, you're an assassin. Yeah, they've actually got... And then you can be like, awesome, like, free-form storytelling moment. You know what? The Guild of Assassins is going to hire you to kill the king... And you're going to find out it's the queen. What are you going to do about it? Like improv, but classic bit, you know, awesome bit of story element there.
Yeah.
It wouldn't have existed if you hadn't had those things in motion, or it's a lot easier to make it. Because it's organic. It doesn't feel like you're forcing, oh, well, the assassins have go kill this guy. That's cool. Yep, good. Okay, like.
Yeah.
And it'll make your characters really feel like, wow, did he have that plan? You can bluff your character, like, did he have that planned out? Was that going on all along? Oh, wow, I didn't think of that. And also, if you plan it beforehand, it'll make coming out with scenarios a lot easier. So if you're like, okay, I haven't had time to write my campaign session this week.
Hmm.
Well, okay, I've already got a thriving world. What are the five crucial characters doing?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Well, I can probably build a story from that. Okay, cool. I can even give your characters a week off. Hey, do what you want. The world's doing things anyway. You'll find stuff to do.
Yeah.
So that's my tip. Build character timelines. And the way I do the character timelines is I say I've got 9 sessions.
Yep.
Each session I have the character's name, and each session I write what he's doing. And then I have notes, one session of what he's doing and one session of what he's doing with the characters.
Yep.
So if he's not interacting with the characters, I just leave that blank. And then I have what he's doing. Because even when he interacts with the characters, he won't be there the entire session. Maybe he will be, but normally he won't be. So I have... interacts with the characters, then goes off and does this. Or does this before he meets the characters, does this.
Yeah.
So if one of them follows him before or after, they can see him. He doesn't just appear out of nowhere, walk into the bar, walk out of the bar, and then log out.
Vanish. That's true. Yeah, that's actually, that's an interesting way of putting that. Yeah, so you make characters that really are three-dimensional characters.
And I tell you what, it's not just for the characters, it makes your life so much easier as a GM.
Mm.
Because like that magical scenario you just concocted, you can do that. I mean, like what I'm doing now, all the guys have different agendas and they're all following them. And if you choose to follow them up, you don't. There's an overall story arc that was going on and it's in the background. It'll just mean you guys have always got something to do.
What happens when you've got, say, 50 NPCs?
Okay, to be fair, I've got a lot. I got a lot of...
Yep.
Not the crucial... But do for your crucial ones.
Your crucial ones. The ones that are going to advance the story.
Your movers and shakers. For example, a lowly beggar isn't going to do much. But the head of the Assassin's Guild, who the Queen's dealing with, is. Yep. So you know what? He's got assassins. So, okay, what's the King doing? Well, if he's going on a trek, those five guards when you've got, say, playing, like, you know, so you've got five guards when the characters can be interacting with, or the King's advisor. He's probably going to be following the King. Cool. You want to look at your main plot character, the ones that the characters will, that the players will develop a relationship with and they'll recognize.
Yeah.
So, because they're not going to notice if Jim the Baker doesn't bake his goods today, right? They are going to notice if Jim the Baker gets killed. Well, it was probably... because he was the one that his daughter was having an affair with the king, and so the queen's trying to wipe out the family out of vengeance or something like that. You know, I don't know. She's trying to punish the daughter. So the crucial characters are the queen's trying to kill someone, and the baker's and the king's having an affair. There are two pawns in all that.
Yep.
They get affected by the main characters. You don't have to write their timelines. They just get killed off.
Yep, got it.
Because... You know, player characters aren't going to notice them.
Yes.
And again, that's kind of like that ripple effect. But you've got that scenario because you've got things set up in place already. Like a movie. You don't really care when, like, Ben Affleck kills 50, like, nameless SWAT guys. But when Jeremy is in the town, you know, when Jeremy Renner dies, you're like, oh my god, he died! It's like, whoa! But, you know, Affleck killed, like, 50 other dudes.
And we didn't care about them.
Whatever. Good for them. So, yeah.
Yeah, okay, interesting point. Actually, that's something that I might have to consider using in the future. I wouldn't say I've ever gone so far as to make a timeline for... I've probably made something like a timeline for more important characters, like you said, but I don't think I've done so much as to go, like, you know, this will happen at this point, and this, you know... There are certain things that, I suppose, like, triggers or events, I've always called them, that will happen if something else happens.
Mm.
You know, a character will have to respond, you know, naturally to the death of someone or an event happening.
Yeah.
But beyond that, I've never really thought of using something like timelines. Not for NPCs. I've thought about it for my own characters that I've played. And, you know, having a character arc or a timeline or something like that for your character where you go, like, by the end of the story, I would like my character to get to this point. And, you know, maybe things come up in the story where your character will have to completely change their plan or may never get to where you thought they'd get. But at least beforehand, you have an idea of the person you're going to play as or who the person is and who they might become by the end of the story. Which is good for developing a character in a single campaign and, of course, over longer or several campaigns.
And you know what? Maybe next week's topic. You know what? Next week's topic we can deal with.
Yep.
Will actually be how do you deal with when things don't go your character's way. So you're playing a character.
Yep.
I want him to be this badass by the end.
Yep.
Two sessions in, he gets one of his legs blown off, and
he's now the cripple.
And due to that, he rolls a phobia and he's scared of guns.
Yep.
So he's not going to be the badass. What do you do?
Yep.
So next week you can help us with that because you've played a lot more characters than I have.
Yeah.
How do you deal when things simply do not?
I like that one. Yeah, let's do that next week.
Because I think there's one guy in your campaign who keeps telling you, oh, well, you did this to my character, now I can't play him.
Yep. Yep, so, absolutely.
So, okay, give him some advice. How would you deal
with a
crippling flaw that's pushed on you in the game?
And I've got a week to think about it.
Fantastic.
All right, so next topic.
Topic of the week. So, this week's Facebook topic of the week, or today's, you know, question of the week, was which do we prefer, Resident Evil or Underworld? Take it away.
Well... I think we were talking about the films, of course. I didn't imagine that the question applied to the games, but you know what? Maybe it does. I don't know. Maybe that's what people thought.
I don't think there's Underworld.
You know, maybe they were comparing Resident Evil the game to Underworld the film. Oh, no, maybe they were thinking
we'll say film versus film.
But last year we had a discussion. It was, have you seen Resident Evil? And I convinced you that it was worth watching, and I know you still haven't gone and watched it, so obviously I wasn't that convincing. But you did agree to, you know, that the film might be worth watching.
You know, now you say, I'm like, I should go. Now it's like, nice to mention Resident Evil. Now it's not from, I will never watch that film. I need, like, now it's like, I should get around to that. It's now on my to-do list.
It'll be your mid-year goal. Watch Resident Evil. I have a mid-year goal to produce a game. You have a mid-year goal to watch Resident Evil.
Alex is buy a house. Yours is produce a game. Mine's watch a movie.
Have you seen the Underworld films, any of them?
I started watching one and I was just like, I quit.
Wow, okay, so this really is I'll take this one away. So, Underworld, obviously, vampires, werewolves, very World of Darkness, you know, Timothy Bradstreet art style, and, of course, you know, Kate Beckinsale, and, I can't actually think of the name of the male character in the film. But anyway, you have that. And then, of course, Resident Evil. Not only do you have an excellent game franchise that's been going on forever, but you have, a series of just, flick action films. Of course, Milla Jovovich leading all of them. She's fantastic. And a lot of other great leading ladies through all of them. So how do you make a choice? Where do you go? Well, one's clearly vampires. One is clearly zombies. Those are your two choices.
Jesus.
It's a zombies vampire choice, all right? I love them both. That's why we had to ask this question this week. I couldn't decide which one it was going to be.
Well, I'll tell you what. I think opposite approach. I think they're both crap. So there we go.
Ouch. There we go. Well, yeah, but even if that were true, which one's crapper? Which one's crapper? So that was the purpose of this question. Well, Buck's going all out on this. I of course have to defend my ladies, Miller and Kate. I can't let him put him down like this. So Kim Ravenick did reply to this, and he did say that Underworld, no question. And he said Mila Jovovich is cool, but I ain't got, but she ain't got squat over Kate Beckinsale. Now we love Mila, we do. She's an excellent actress. She's in a lot of fantastic films, but I think this one might have to go to Underworld.
Okay, Underworld.
It might have to go to Underworld.
Okay. Now this being said, you've just told me watch Resident Evil. Right.
Watch Resident Evil.
Okay, now here's a challenge for you.
Yep.
I want you to pitch. Okay, I sit down.
On the spot?
Okay, you get a phone call right now.
Yep.
Nathan, I've got 3 hours free. I'm so Saturday. I've done away between the house and my chores. I've got 3 hours free. I've got Underworld, got Resident Evil. Which one am I watching? You said Underworld. But Nathan, you just told me to watch Resident Evil. You said it was so good. Why should I watch Underworld?
Buck, you're a fan of World of Darkness, aren't you?
I am.
Imagine sitting down. For 2 hours, you can immerse yourself in the World of Darkness.
But Nathan, I hear that it's like one of those really corny World of Darkness things where, like, I'm a vampire and I've got powers, but I'm a werewolf and I can't be friends with you. No! Oh, wait, that's Twilight.
That is Twilight. And I was going to say, if you had to make a choice...
What, between Twilight and Underworld? Jesus, that's like saying, look, I've got some vomit in a bucket or an old sandwich. Which one do you want to eat? Oh, jeez, Nathan. Pretty tough. Hey. Underworld's a sandwich.
I know, but you said an old dirty sandwich or something? Sandwich you pulled out of a shoe?
Beats vomit.
Not a great improvement. After you eat that sandwich, that bucket's going to have a whole lot more vomit in it.
Yeah, but it'll be my vomit. Not me vomiting someone else's vomit out, like vomitception. So keep going. So Nathan, so why should I watch it? So what? So keep going.
So you're a fan of World of Darkness. So you want to get into the World of Darkness setting. Mm-hmm. You want to see maybe like what some of those. If you remember old Vampire the Masquerade, how you had sort of generations in vampires, mm-hmm. and the older generations were more powerful than the younger generations. They were closer mm-hmm. to the original bloodline. Well, if you wanted to see, say, those mid level to the older level generations of vampires playing their politics games. Only one of the mid-level vampires is your main character. That's Kate Beckinsale. And her job is to hunt down and kill the enemies of the vampire society in this film happening to be werewolves.
Okay.
What does an assassin-type killer character like that
I'm interested
do?
There.
How do they feel?
Okay.
How deadened are they as a person after 600 years of this process?
Okay. But Nathan, I'm really afraid there's going to be some really cheesy plot development when she falls in love with one of the werewolves. Will that happen?
Well, Buck, let me tell you, there's no fear... Yeah, that's going to happen.
Go on, say it with a straight face.
But you know what? What I liked about Underworld was that they didn't play too much on the love thing. They didn't do that too much. And another thing I kind of liked about it was they didn't play too much on the fangs and blood thing, which, to me, when you talk about vampires and vampire films, a lot of people really overdo that. Ah, vampires, they have to drink blood and we have to show... Not really. It's not really a thing. That vampires are more than that. Mm-hmm. That's you know, we've got humans in this film. We should show them eating sandwiches. Like, yes, we get it. Humans eat food to live. We don't need to show a scene of them eating food.
I'm just picturing every scene of humans eating. Like, there's just some guy in a boardroom going, Jason, where are those stocks eating a sandwich? A cop just walks in. Well, I'm under arrest. The criminal's eating a sandwich. You'll never catch me, copper. Just every single scene.
You've seen films where there's where you have a scene where they're at a dinner table and they're eating, or they're having a discussion and they're eating, or something like that. And you know, it's a good plot device to get people together and get them talking. But it's better when it's used as a plot device. The dinner itself is the plot device, as opposed to just an excuse to get people talking.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yep.
Yeah. So same thing with vampires. Don't just put vampire feeding in there to fill up a minute of screen time.
Mm-hmm.
Do it as a reason to actually be a plot device. Mm-hmm. And I think Underworld did that quite well. They cool. didn't make it just, the vampires are going to drink blood, let's make that. No, we'll use it when it's important for the plot.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah.
So...
Mid-year goals, Underworld, and...
Mid-year goals.
Primarily...
Wow.
And you know what? If anyone else out there has not watched those films... Go and rent them. Do you even rent films? Can you even rent films anymore?
You mean through Utah, right?
I mean through, like, video stores. Do they even exist?
I saw one the other day in Reservoir, but...
Well, if you can't rent a film, buy it. What's the DVDs aren't even expensive. Go buy it, watch it, and at the end of the day, you'll get to stick a nice flick on your DVD collection or your Blu-ray collection or whatever it is you have.
Okay.
VHS.
So the official thing is Underworld is better than Resident Evil?
Deviant Games has proclaimed Underworld better than Resident Evil. It hurts to say that.
So Underworld, not zombies. So vampires, not zombies.
Vampires, not zombies.
I have a quick question, though.
Yes.
Those are the first two films. In terms of escalation, and I mean the scale of ridiculous. Now, we know that as genres go on, any film is subject to the ridiculous factor, which is, okay, we had a really cool white plot at the start.
Yep.
It was really cool. Crap. Now we've got four more movies to do. You know what? Let's just up the ante. And the ante keeps upping, and it gets stupid. I mean, it can be done well,
yep.
But it very rarely is done well.
I'll be honest.
Who loses out there?
The original Underworld and the original Resident Evil were both the best films of their genre. So they never, both films never got better as they went on.
By the end of it, though, which one is more like, really?
Underworld is the one that lost out. Sorry, not Underworld. Resident Evil, I believe, got more ridiculous a lot quicker. I mean, you're talking about an apocalypse film, so obviously you're limiting what you can do, and Underworld is, of course, a bit more of a in the shadows kind of film, but even they got to a point where vampires are known. So, you know, it's an interesting thing to go through. I thought the story and the conspiracy was far more interesting in the original Underworld film, and the subsequent ones became a bit more, you know, there was still that conspiracy, but it was just driven by action. And, you know, which isn't necessarily a good thing. And Resident Evil, the first one, was really, I think, mimicked the old Resident Evil games more, which were fantastic. They had that quietness and that slowness and those jumps and those scares and those desperate scenes of not enough ammo and that kind of stuff, which was great.
Mm.
And, you know, some surprising twists and characters that that stuck around. It wasn't a classic horror film where they just slowly died off one by one. They really stuck around to the end of the film, which was great. Whereas later on in the Resident Evil films, it just became an action fest of action. No characters, no development. Pretty much could have even gone without a story, just to have more action. But again, that can be fun.
been off topic, but that's why I always liked Pirates of the Caribbean, the first one.
I agree. Again, best Pirates of the Caribbean.
I like the second one was kind of good, and the third one, I give up. And the fourth one was just like, okay, you've just stopped trying.
They did.
I think by the third one was just like, the second what's-her-name became the King of Pirates. I'm like, okay, cool. Yeah, why not? Because apparently it means nothing to these people. Okay. So, you know what? I'll try and check them out. That's when you girls... Okay, so our how-to. So this is a little section where we talk about... So tips and tricks is different. So people ask us, okay, what's the difference between tips and tricks and how-to? Well... Tips and tricks is more over the place. It's things like, so this week's, yes, it was...
Role-playing.
How-to is specific real-life situations we've had to deal with, a bit more close to us as game developers.
Are these first-world problems?
These are first-world game development problems, son.
Got it.
So tips and tricks can be all over the place. How-to is specifically going to be a problem we've encountered.
So how other budding game makers cannot make the mistakes we've made? Is that what it is?
This week's how-to?
Yep.
Okay, you've got a mechanic in conflict.
Yes.
It is the economic victory.
Of course. And conflict is now available, of course, so have a look at it and understand exactly what we're talking about.
Now, the issue with conflict is there's a thing called economic victory.
Yes.
Effectively, it means if a player amasses enough money, he wins.
Yep. Now, this really does take the length of the game to do.
It takes a long time to do. Yep. It's difficult. We're not saying it's easy.
No, it is not.
Issue is...
Yep.
Last couple of games we've run, players have run by...
Yeah, last couple of games you've been in, at least, yeah?
Yeah, and there was a couple of players complaining, saying... Now, I'm not... Yeah, complaining isn't the word... Some would say just whinging... Others would say Saul loses.
We know which player it was, so go on. Yep.
And they said that it's, you know, economic makes it too much of a pushover. No one's doing anything about it.
Yep.
Okay. My thing was, well, maybe we should do something like when you vote for your own So every time you vote on an agenda, you get money for voting on an agenda, yep. which is fine. But even if the agenda benefits you, you get money for it. And I was like, well, maybe we remove that bit. So you can vote on agendas.
Yep.
You just don't get money for voting on your own ones. Because it's like, well, you're already getting a benefit out of it. So yep. that's the price you pay. If you choose to back your own agenda rather than someone else's, you don't get money.
I'll tell you what the story is here. And it's that people are not acting accordingly to the threat of an economic victory. In the last game that ran, and that's what you're referring to, yes? What happened was players were aware for a very, very long time.
Just one second, yep. sorry. So the how-to topic is, how do you deal with a mechanic in your game that yep. isn't broken?
That isn't broken.
It's not illegal, but a lot of players are using it.
They're using it, yep. Look, it's a case of, in the last game, players were very aware that there was an economic victory.
Mm-hmm.
It was coming.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll compare it to something else that happened that game, because I think this is a very fair justification. China went for a rush victory. They were trying to win by grabbing vital territories. And they got 3 out of 4 vital territories and very close to grabbing the last one. But a player took the right steps. He was in the region and he went out there and he defeated China and he stopped that happening. Problem solved.
Mm-hmm.
For longer than that was even going on, one of our superpowers was building towards an economic victory. Now, not a single person, only a single person worked against that. Everyone mm-hmm. else mm-hmm. supported it and was suddenly surprised when he won the game. I think it's not a mechanic issue. I think it's an issue that people aren't viewing economy as a legitimate threat to losing the game. Mm-hmm. Because when it says when you get in your game headlines that someone is, their currency is growing particularly strong, which is essentially a warning mm-hmm, that they're coming close to winning the game by economy, it doesn't just mean that they're coming close to winning the game by economy. It means that they're actually getting more money every turn and becoming very, very powerful. So at that point, they've already become quite a threat, but no one took the steps to go and deal with them.
Mm.
And there were a lot of people in that region. Now, when I say no one took the steps to go and deal with them, 2 people were on their way. They just got there a little bit late.
And in my defense, from day one, I've been involved in an occupation of my own country.
Well, yeah, you were busy fighting and all that.
Which pretty much just seen them. And the thing is, to defeat them, I had to spend money.
Yes.
I didn't have money. I had choices of get my troops to bunker down and buy more troops or get wiped out.
There was plenty of opportunity to stop them. Next time this group plays, next time you play in conflict, there's going to be a lot more attention on economic victories, and people are going to do things. Because that's the thing. Oh, he's winning by economy, and he keeps sending me money to strengthen his economy, and I keep taking it.
Well, yeah.
You can just send that money back and stop him taking it. That's the thing. You can't win an economic victory without help from... It's the one victory where you need the support of other players to win. Mm. Every other victory condition, you actively have to kill people and destroy them. This is the one condition where you need people's favor to win. And people keep granting it, and then they're surprised at the end of... They bitch and they moan, and they're surprised at the end of the game when they lose to these people, but they took their money. They spent their money. They voted towards them. They let them win the agendas. They did all these things which let them win the game, and suddenly they're surprised that they've lost.
Mm-hmm. So really, in this case, the how-to, how you dealt with this one is that, you know what? Players got to learn.
Players will learn. I think because you've got to remember, economic victory was introduced later than the other victory. It's the newest victory condition. It was the last thing that was introduced before the book's release in terms of, you know, a victory condition. And I think that you've also got to look at some of the players that have been playing as well recently with you. Mm. And you've got to realize that some of these guys still aren't used to, oh, the game can be won that way. I thought that was just a joke.
Mm.
The way you win is by getting territories or beating people.
True.
No, you can win without a military, but you actually have to go out there and be prepared to fight the game that way. And unfortunately, they're building militaries, but they're not building influence or economy or anything like that. So guess what happens? They lose.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Okay. So, you know, had Brazil been any slower at getting to that victory, had he have been delayed a single vote or a single turn or anything like that, he probably would have been wiped out before he got to pull that off. And then the game would have gone back to a point of, well, who's next on the list of players to win? But he won. He betrayed his alliance and he won the game. And you know what? He played it very well. Yeah. He earned it. I agree. It was a good win. So we have one more thing to talk about, do we?
Upcoming. So HP knows the number of changes coming. First off, season two. This is season two. I'm Nathan Buck in the morning. This is going to be our regular weekly lineup, so you have a bit more consistency. We're going to be available on iTunes.
Yes.
So if you listen to us on iTunes for the first time, hi, welcome. Please check out deviantgames.com for all your Nathan Buck in the morning podcast needs. And
deviantgames.net.
Deviantgames.net. Well, at least I'm saying complete 2052 this year.
High five to that, Buck.
Small steps.
Small steps, Buck's getting there. check out the Facebook page as well. It's just deviantgames, mm-hmm. two words.
Every week in the Facebook page, we're having updates, so, you know.
We have questions of the week. We have articles on historic figures.
Yeah.
Pretty interesting characters.
We have...
And we also have role-playing tips Monday.
And every Wednesday, I'm throwing up a couple of backgrounds for you guys. Posters you can just throw them on your desktop, or posters, whatever. Just, it's free. You can grab it. It'll be
and
up
it's,
there.
It's things we're working on for upcoming games and things like that as well.
Other times, just a bit of artwork I've done. What else? So we got all that. So check out the website for all the new updates.
Now the website's going to be changing up a little bit this year. The look, the
our goal
the way
is
it works.
By midway through the year, we're going to update the website.
It's going to be a funky new website.
Not yet. Don't say it because we've got a really.
I'm saying it, Buck. Mid-year, funky new website.
Yeah, but I'm saying don't expect it like next week. So yeah, but no, funky new website. We're going to update a lot of things. Hopefully have a new product coming out midway through the year. That's our goal. I'm not going to say what it is yet. If you want to know what it is, go listen to the old podcasts.
Or look on the website. It might even be on there.
Hey, check it out. Could be one of a couple of products there, though.
That's true.
Go keep them guessing.
Yep.
Very exciting week coming up. Thank you for season one. Sorry, episode one. Season two.
Season two. Shit.
Icon has podcast.
Icon has... It's all right, Buck. We'll let you on the radios. We'll let people listen to you. All right, I have to take him back to the home now. Say bye-bye to the nice people, Buck.
Woo! It's pill time! Get my chair!